This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, The Radical Perception of Larry Eigner. Larry Eigner's poetry was highly praised by no less than William Carlos Williams and championed by Robert Creeley. Yet Larry Eigner is not very well known. He died in 1996, and when his collected poems finally came out in 2010, they didn't make much of a splash. But maybe that splash is coming because this year, a selection of his poems was published with the wonderful title Calligraphy Typewriters. The foreword is written by Charles Bernstein, who says that Eigner's poems, quote, bear the weight of a gravitational aesthetic force field unprecedented in American poetry. Charles Bernstein is the author of many books of poems and essays. I sort of think of him as the literary lion of American experimental poetry. He joins me here in Brooklyn, where we both live. Charles, before we say anything about Larry Eigner, can we just hear one of his poems? It's a really short one that you picked out called Again Dawn.
So this is from November 1959. Again dawn, the sky dropped its invisible whiteness. We saw pass out nowhere, empty the blue. Stars, our summer on the ground. Like last night, another time in fragments.
So tell us what you see and hear in this little poem and why you like it so much.
This is a iconic poem of Larry's, and actually was on the side of the Berkeley Art Museum for an Eigner show about 10 years ago. I read it slow, keeping the space in between, because the space on the page is so crucial. At the same time, you know, when you read something out loud, you don't necessarily have the equivalent of space. So you could say, again, dawn, the sky dropped its invisible whiteness. We saw pass out nowhere, empty the blue. Stars, our summer on the ground, like last night, another time in fragments, which gives a different feeling to it, almost makes it more comprehensible. But so I think one of the things I like about it is the toggling between those two things with the space of time, so that each moment registers and then a shift. Where? When? Fragments are often thought of as something that breaks things up, but in Eigner, they're recurrences like dawn, and the space between the individual lines are fragments that both bind and unbind and rebind.
And then after, again, dawn, he has the magnificent line, the sky dropped its invisible whiteness. You can see that. It's invisible whiteness, but actually you can see that. It's a very precise image, and it corresponds to dawns that we've all experienced.
Right. So you have that combination of extremely vivid, perceived everyday life, ordinary life, no odd words in this at all.
Yeah.
No speaker, no eye speaker in the poem, no, right? It's a poem that when you look at it, you can perceive, almost like looking at a four-dimensional box or a hologram. I think there's a lot of ways in which Eigner's work means reading as a holographic experience. And I think sometimes the problem, it's not that his work doesn't have difficult vocabularies, it's not esoteric, but nonetheless, it can be elusive. And I think it's because it's not telling you what it's thinking. It's not saying the dawn is beautiful or this morning I woke up and there was another dawn. It allows you to experience something, just as you, Curtis, very vividly said. You said you looked at it, you knew what it was. But you have to put yourself as a reader in the position of looking at the poem as this sort of box that you look into, and then this verbal language transforms itself into an experience. And that way of reading is challenging for people used to poems which more express a sentiment or describe something in a more conventional way or have a narrative. None of those things does Larry Eigner do.
I want to play a recording from 1994 of Eigner himself reading this poem. It's from the Penn Sound Audio Archive of Recorded Poetry, which Charles Bernstein directs, co-directs. Now, it's important to say that before we hear it, Eigner was born with cerebral palsy. And for people who haven't heard him before, he can be difficult to understand, at least in the first hearing. Here's the poem again.
Again dawn, the sky dropped its invisible whiteness we saw pass up, no more empty the blue stars. I stumbled on the ground like last night, another time in Paris.
That was Larry Eigner. We're going to talk a bit about his disability, but first I want to bring in my other guest, Jennifer Bartlett, who has been patiently waiting her turn. Jennifer is a poet, and she's been writing a series of posts about Larry Eigner for Harriet, the Poetry Foundation's blog. She's also writing a biography of Larry Eigner, and like Eigner, she also has cerebral palsy. Jennifer, you chose a short Eigner poem to read, even shorter than the one Charles read. Would you read it now for us?
Sure. Keep at it, they say, when they see L reading, then disappear down the front steps, and plenty die playing the black market, a heart attack in middle age.
Now, I don't know why, but that's kind of a funny poem to me. I kind of laugh when I read that one. I'm not even quite clear why. L is almost certainly Larry Eigner himself, and the people saying "keep at it" seem to be able-bodied people, kind of condescendingly encouraging him. Is that the way you read that poem?
Yes.
Good, I got it right.
There's a lot of humor in the poem. Unlike his other poems, this poem is a little bit more narrative, but people might not know that if they don't know the bat story. The poem really is primarily about Eigner's grandfather, who was an immigrant who made a lot of money and died shortly after the stock market crash under circumstances that no one knows how he died.
Well, now that you say that it's about his grandfather, that clarifies things. It begins, keep at it, probably his grandfather talking. They say when they see L reading, then disappear down the front steps. And this is where the poem does something wild. It says, and plenty die, playing the black market, a heart attack in middle age. It takes a spectacular leap right in the middle of that poem that will take most readers, give them pause. You have to fill in the void about what that leap is leaving out. And you, as his biographer, know many of these biographical gaps. But as a poet, this is one of his techniques, to leave out a lot of interstitial details.
Definitely. It's really interesting. I wouldn't say it's directly about his grandfather. Mm-hmm. It's definitely related, and it's interesting how it feels to read a poem once I have that knowledge versus not having that knowledge, because I can't get the knowledge out of my head.
Right. Now, as you note in your writings about him, Eigner rarely brings up his disability he directly in his poems. It just doesn't come up very often. Yet, if we know a bit about his biography, it's hard not to read his poems through the prism of cerebral palsy, through imagining the poet having that. What do you make of that dilemma for a reader?
For me, it's easy. I think it's easy for Charles. I think people new to this struggle with it. But every time I read a poem, say, by Joy Harjo, I'm not thinking Joy Harjo's an Indian.
Yeah, you've gone beyond it and appreciated her work for what it is. So,
yeah,
so at a point, where you're saying Larry Eigner, you go beyond his disability and read the poems.
Yes, I think there's a space, particularly with the poet like Larry, who is not even remotely an identity poet, that we can go beyond that and just read the work for what it is. When I read Larry's work, I find a lot of beauty and lyricism and fragmentariness, and that's what I'm interested in.
I'd like to read a poem of Larry Eigner's from August 5th, 1968, and I think it illustrates the point you just made. It goes like this. Clear-cut shadows. A bicycle by its motion erect in the street. Appeared and disappeared. Trees stir in the wind. It's very short, very, very crisp. And it, basically, the poet saw from his window a bike pass by outside and recorded the immediate experience. And what makes it vivid is that phrase, a bicycle by its motion erect in the street. So you have almost a photographic still image of a bicycle in the mind saying, well, it's erect and staying up because he's in motion. And this is a very typical poem from Larry Eigner. A lot of his poems take place in his house, with him looking out the window, perceiving, listening to the birds, watching the clouds. This was, I think it's safe to say, this is because he was largely cloistered by his physical condition and brought to the smallest things a great intensity of perception and feeling, I thought. So, Charles, let me ask you, do you think his disability informs his poetry even though he doesn't talk about it?
I think that, like everyone, Larry Eigner lived in a body, and that's a particular body, and lived in a place not so far from Boston, not so far from Gloucester, where Charles Olson lived, in a place called Swampscott.
Right near the beach, which comes up frequently in his poems, yeah.
Right, and I think that location is equally important. Great thing about great poets is that you can read them based on what your desire and your interest is. And there's nothing wrong with people wanting to find in a poet something about their biographical or social, cultural, or the time that they live in, if that's what they're interested in. Hmm. It's possible in Larry Eigner because of his radical aesthetics. And his radical aesthetics have to do with constellating disjunct particulars. You could call them fragments, but it's the way the fragments come together. And it's this method which is persistent in his work, and he is the most radical practitioner of this method. Hmm. He allows you as the reader to be the center of the poem, not him as the writer. Mm-hmm. And this style of juxtaposition, sometimes thought of as collage or montage, constitutes the work in a rhythmic flow that deepens consciousness and the experience of consciousness as you're reading the poems.
I want to read another poem, and this one I just chose kind of at random. This is one from June of 1964, and it's called A Window in Darkness. The baby cries in the next house. This is a neighborhood. I can't do a thing. Dogs are quiet. It's that last thing, that dogs are quiet. It's very classically Asian sounding to me, the sort of putting another image that you don't expect right in the middle of it. And I think he must have been influenced by classic Chinese and Japanese poets.
This poem that you bring up, again, I'd say that, you know, when he doesn't title most of his poems. Of course, you could think the poems are related to the miniatures and to haikus. This is what you're asking, because they are often micro poems, super short poems, but they have this macrocosmic dimension. For example, this poem itself couldn't have a more cosmic title than A Window in Darkness. And of course, you could say literally that's what he's saying. It's you have a window and it's nighttime. Mm. And of course, A Window in Darkness, I mean, that's the way I feel a good deal of the time. This is what our life is like. Is a window in
it's a beautiful
darkness.
Title. Yeah.
And a baby cries, you know, the baby cries is also while it's also an actual baby and the sound, it's also again an expression of some suffering that's distant and far off. Mm-hmm. In the darkness, you hear pain. You hear suffering. The baby cries in. Because a baby doesn't just cry. It cries in somewhere. It is somewhere.
In the next house.
The next house. And this is a neighborhood. I mean, then it really, you know, it's sort of unbelievable. Is a neighborhood. So that he's not writing a disquisition on what neighborhood and community is. But if you read it the way I am, A Window in Darkness. What is a neighborhood? The child, you know, it's I believe that the quote from scripture, the voice of him crying in the wilderness, here, beholdeth the name of the Lord. I mean, this is secular sublimity, I would call it. I can't do a thing. To me, you could read that line in a biographical way, but you could also read it as the fundamental poetics that I aspire to, too, to give up mastery and to allow being to take over your perception as a poet, to allow what happens to happen. I can't do a thing could also be read biographically, right?
Right, because he physically can't get up and do something about it, perhaps.
But the window in the darkness that I got up with this morning, reading the newspaper and all the rest, I can't do a thing either.
Exactly.
I'm also,
right.
And then dogs are quiet. Mm-hmm. I don't know what even that is. It's haunting.
I know.
Because you're talking about something that's not being seen. You know the dogs are there. And dogs are quiet can be ominous. It can be, again, the dogs of hell are quiet, or it can just be your neighborhood dog. And that... this poem, this small micro world, creates a neighborhood, that a poem is a neighborhood of specific constituted perceptions.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say something terribly inappropriate, probably inappropriate and embarrassing to me, but there's a quality to him of, that I'm sure he wasn't a drug user, but there's a quality to him of, well, maybe he was, but of
no,
somebody.
He wasn't.
But
he lived in too controlled an environment. Yeah. Although I'm sure that his friends in Berkeley must have tried to give him joints because he was surrounded by.
But there's a quality to his of being of this hyper awareness and thinking along with the awareness that's very kind of
psychedelic. Absolutely, I completely agree. That's what I was talking about when I was saying the kind of 4D. You could go back and substitute the word psychedelic.
Yeah.
He is a poet of the 60s and a psychedelic poet of the 60s. Absolutely, I agree with
and
that.
And you don't need drugs for that. You need quiet and an active imagination.
Yeah, so we should add to this point that Jennifer just made, because it's one frame that we haven't talked about. He's like, he's more Zen than he is drug culture.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's the psychedelic within the Zen of the everyday.
Yeah.
That's absolutely crucial frame. And I think as more people are interested in things like Zen, which Eigner himself was interested in, that also could bring about, because, you know, meditation encourages people to let that flow of perception happen, to not hierarchize in those moments. And for people who have that consciousness or interested in that consciousness, then Eigner's work will make more sense.
He may well have his day.
And it's also informed by Jewish mysticism, right, Charles?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. A Jewish mystic, Zen, psychedelic poet of the everyday.
Acid!
Jennifer Bartlett and Charles Bernstein, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks.
Great to be here. Wonderful to be able to talk about a great American poet, one of the great American poets of the 20th century.
You can read some poems by Larry Eigner and articles about him by Jennifer Bartlett on our website. Charles Bernstein wrote the foreword to Calligraphy Typewriters, the Selected Poems of Larry Eigner, which is edited by Curtis Faville and Robert Grenier and published by the University of Alabama Press. Do let us know what you think of this podcast. Email us at poetryfoundation.org. You can link to the podcast on social media from SoundCloud, or you can subscribe to it on iTunes. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.